It's WKX in the Morning. I'm your host, AJ Kierstead. It's time for the New Hampshire Business Update with Jeff Feingold, editor of the New Hampshire Business Review. You can get more from them at nhbr.com. Welcome back to the show, Jeff.
Great to be here, AJ.
So it's looking like finally they're going to be reopening the Canadian border. I say knocking on wood 15 million times, hoping they don't change their damn minds again. How much of an impact has this closure had on the business community?
It's been major for certainly the hospitality industry. You know, it's also been difficult for individual businesses like manufacturers and others that do trade with Canada, but they have had an ability to continue to pursue what they need to do basically. But in terms of the tourism industry, which is extremely important, the Canadian market is extremely important for the New Hampshire tourism industry. Basically, how many seasons are there? They missed last summer, they missed the winter, they missed this summer. There's three major seasons. Plus, if you go with leaf peeping,
right?
You know, that's a lot of travel that they haven't had. I mean, I know that when I used to live up in New London and drive to work every day down 89, at certain times of the year, you'd see more Canadian license plates than New Hampshire, because there were so many people going south or coming back.
You see it a ton at the coast, especially. I mean, the summer. I mean, I go to Old Orchard Beach, there's more damn Montreal license or Ontario license plates than there were Maine license plates over there.
No, it's true. It's absolutely true. And that's been really difficult. And, you know, for a long time, you know, people understood that why the border was closed, or accepted that the border was closed. And then I think what happened that really pushed this was when Canada opened up their border to Americans who were vaccinated. And it took the federal government, the American government, a couple of months to finally say, okay, we're going to open it now to vaccinated Canadians. The irony is Canada probably has a higher rate of vaccination than Americans, than the U.S. does.
It's so much easier to vaccinate really such a small population. Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, their population's so small. They were pretty strong from the onset wanting to get the vaccine out there, very similar to how the United States and Israel were and Great Britain. So it almost felt like a lot of political posturing back and forth between the United States and Canada with regards to, well, we're going to have this high standard. We're going to make sure everyone's safe and kind of going the no one's going to have COVID ever again route, which just isn't, it's not realistic. It's not feasible. People are still going to have COVID and it's still going to get crossed between the border because we're that close. I mean, we're both first world nations.
Yeah, I think part of the difficulty was for some reason the U.S. government decided to pair the Canadian border with the Mexican border. And I'm not anywhere near as familiar with what's going on in Mexico in terms of vaccinations, but I'm making my assumption that it's probably not going as quickly as it's going by in Canada and the United States. And so they waited to open up both borders at the same time. And I have to say that I don't quite get that. I mean, there's different economies along the Canadian border as opposed to the Mexican border. There are different needs of the businesses in those areas. And a lot of businesses pay the price. And it's not just New Hampshire; it's every state along the border. And it's been over 18 months. So you can think about how that's affected individual businesses, especially like you said, if you had a business in Hampton where you knew that a big huge percent of your business during the summertime was going to be coming from Canadian visitors, and they're not there. So what do you do about that? Just hope for the best.
To me, the difference between the Canadian-Mexican border, the reason why they never did it was just political posturing. They're afraid, especially with the Democrats in power, they're very, very conscious about being perceived as not treating Mexico and the Hispanic populations coming to the border. They want to be perceived as racist, which came to a detriment through COVID, where it's literally a first world nation that we've had a very open relationship with for a couple hundred years, essentially.
But to be fair, we've also had a very open relationship with Mexico over the centuries, and mm-hmm. That's it might have had something to do with politics. It certainly had something to do with it. But I can't figure out why, especially with COVID, we were picking out countries individually to allow or not allow. And, you know, for Canada, which has been, you know, had a, like I said, it had a slow start to vaccinations, but who didn't? Yeah. They really picked it up. And it's to say, you know, it should have been on an individual nation basis, because we were opening up to a lot of countries and then we weren't opening up to other ones. I mean, we didn't, you know, you didn't just say, you know, we're opening the door to everybody at one time. You don't do that. So you just go by what the country's track record is. And that's what the other nations were doing. They didn't let Americans in for a long time because of our policies and our low vaccination rates. And of course, just the high COVID rates we were having for so long. And the Americans weren't allowed to travel to other countries around the world.
Now, how does the manufacturing industry play into being impacted with the closing of the Canadian border? I mean, we obviously think of Mexico there being a big we import a lot of things from Mexico and south of the border. Do we have very much of that with Canada? I'm speaking from personal experience. My father worked for a cordage company that had a branch in Canada and then another branch in Maine, and it's something I was just curious about.
There's some very close ties between manufacturers in Canada and the United States. There's several manufacturers in the New Hampshire. Several manufacturers in New Hampshire are owned by Canadian companies, and especially along the northern part of the state. And it's been like this, as far as I know, forever. I mean, it's grown much more as more New Hampshire companies and Canadian companies are expanding their markets beyond their own borders. And I know that, you know, New Hampshire, almost every gun vendor I can think of in the last maybe 30 years has made a trip to Canada, at least one, with a trade mission to firm up ties, expand ties with Canadian businesses, especially in Quebec, which is obviously our closest neighbor in Canada. And there's a very, very strong ties in terms of products and materials crossing each way. You know, it's also, if in terms of manufacturing, it might not be specifically manufacturing, but the timber industry is very important in terms of the Canadian supplier, and also in sometimes it's been a detriment to New Hampshire timber industry. But that's a separate animal. But it's Canada is our number one trading partner. It always is, and it probably always will be. And I think New Hampshire is not Canada's biggest trading partner, but I think New Hampshire is a major trading partner of Quebec.
Yeah, definitely. And you look along the states along the Canadian border, not many of them are very high-income states or high-population states, so they have very similar economics when it comes to, like, labor, like lumber and such. So I'd imagine there's a lot of back and forth, depending on how the pricing goes, to just cut out a good portion of what would have been on the market is really problematic.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that there's a couple of states that are along the border that are major, you know, certainly Michigan is a major manufacturing state. And if anyone's been to Detroit, has seen the bridge, international bridge there that goes to Canada. That thing is backed up to Windsor, Ontario. And that thing is just jamming with people. And when I saw it the first time, it was way back in the early 2000s. And I couldn't believe the traffic of trucks and buses and cars going across this one bridge. And I remember seeing when this thing was shut down, how it was empty, this bridge. It was like, what? I don't know if you're familiar with New York City, but it was this, the George Washington Bridge was empty. It's like apocalyptic looking. And also my son and his family live out in Washington State, in Seattle. And that's a major, commerce going on between those two states, because if Washington is a much larger state, obviously, than New Hampshire. And when you think about the tech industry in Washington State, that, there's a lot going on between Washington State and Vancouver. And Canada is our closest neighbor. It's our closest ally, I think in some case, sometimes Americans don't always treat Canadians with the respect they deserve.
Well, there's all those, they offer, there's all these Frenchies. Economy. We got to make fun of them. That's more, it's a higher priority.
I know it. No, it's really something to be said about that. Yeah. I have to say, I'm a Canadaphile. I'm flayed out there. I love that country, and it's I've visited many, many times, and it's, you know, and I admire that nation for being for doing things in many ways better than we can do it.
All right, so I can't let this week go by without talking to you about the labor protests that are going on across the country. This is kind of outside of the realm of what my expertise is in. So it's been really fascinating to see all these protests or these strikes come up. Yeah. On John Deere's, one of their big manufacturing plants is basically shut down because of that. There's a chance that the entertainment industry is going to be hit really hard here soon if they can't come up to an agreement with the...
I think they did come up to an agreement. Did they? Yes.
Oh, okay. So that's recent, but would have been huge. I mean, the writer's strike that happened a few years back, I mean, it shut down the entirety of basically all broadcast television for months.
Yeah, we've seen similar strikes over the years, but not by this particular union. And you can't, when the artists go on strike, you see it because, you know, you don't see this, your people on the news or whatever, and you don't, you know, and the show's just going to rerun. But if there were a strike by the people who do all the work behind the scenes, there'd be no production at all. And it'd be really, it would, you know, you talk about an industry that would affect an economy. Imagine what the Los Angeles, the Hollywood economy would look like if they did that. It'd be crazy.
Catastrophic. I mean, it's all the production assistants, all the back end people that make everything happen.
Well, I think what it is that COVID has changed a lot for us. It's opened a lot of people's eyes about their, you know, just about how they approach their lives and things. And I think people are finally realizing in a lot of ways that they're more valuable than their employers have thought of them or treated them. It's all, you know, individual basis and everything. And that, you know, and they're saying, well, you know what? I just went through a year and a half of hell for you and I want more money, or I want better working conditions, or I want more insurance or something. And in the past, it would have been probably more of a, no, I can't afford it. But now I think people are saying, wait a second, this was a trauma we all went through. And I think that's part of what this response is. And the other thing is that really, I find it really interesting that all of a sudden, unions are starting to flex their muscle again, which, you know, they hadn't done that. They've been atrophied since the Reagan years. And I think that's really interesting. And some industries like tech and also in the, businesses like Starbucks is very, very strong attempt to unionize Starbucks employees that hadn't been unionized before. And I think that it could be a big change in employer and employee relations in the United States going forward, because I don't think the employees are going to go, you know, crawling back away. And I think employers are, because of the labor shortage, the employees have the upper hand right now. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, and the employers, they can't come on too rough on this, because they're going to make even more people support these strikes that are going on.
Absolutely.
And it's an across the board. I mean, there's a labor shortage everywhere. I mean, these workers could say, bye, screw you. We're going to go somewhere else.
No, exactly. And that's the whole thing. Workers have the upper hand, and they haven't had the upper hand, like I said, since before Reagan. And that's, you know, it's a long time ago. And I think that this, you know, they just have the ability to do this that they hadn't had before. And they also have an administration that's more sympathetic to what they want to do. And they have they'll eventually have a more sympathetic National Labor Relations Board. So it's an opportunity for them to do this, especially for unions, which have been just wallowing and shrinking for so many years now.
Yeah, they basically, I mean, for me as an outsider who's never been in a union before, it seemed to me that they basically became a lobbying agency for different selections of workers more than necessarily working on protecting the workers. And that basically gave this horrible name to people for horrible taste in their mouths for people that are unsure or against unions, thinking that why are we supporting them? Like the NEA especially is a big one that gets a lot of flack, especially around COVID, with pushing against reopenings of schools. And the purpose of the union is supposed to be supporting the workers, and they really needed an image reset.
Yeah, no, the NEA is another matter. My wife was a longtime member of the NEA. She's a retired public school teacher. And I can get a discussion about the NEA because I'm not quite sure that they actually have the best interests of their well, the NEA of New Hampshire has the best interests of their members. The American Federation teachers before that, which unfortunately is now part of NEA, they were a much more aggressive organization. But I'm thinking more of like the, Teamsters, the international electrical workers unions, the machinist unions, those the old school labor unions, those unions have been shrinking, but I think they see opportunities. And actually, I saw an interview with the head of the Teamsters that are really looking to the incoming head of the Teamsters looking to organize tech, because they said that's where we want to go. And if you look at among the most disgruntled employees are the people in the tech industry. And you say, well, they're like the best paid employees. Yeah, but but it's not just pay, it's working conditions.
Yeah.
They're
expected to work 24/7, 24/6, something like that. It's basically a cult behavior is what happened in San Francisco, where they just expected the workers to be there basically whenever. So they offered all these, we have all these fun things. I'm like, yeah, but they're slaving away at a computer with minimal windows because you can't look at your screen with the glare and everything at the same time.
Actually, just because you have a basketball hoop in the office doesn't mean you get a chance to use it.
Yeah. Yeah,
I really do think that COVID has opened eyes for a lot of people, really. I think in terms of the careers they're pursuing, in terms of what kind of jobs what kind of lives they want to have, what their priorities are.
Yeah, the pushing more from work from home is definitely not going to stop. I mean, I'm somehow fortunately holding on to one day a week, still work from home, even though I do a certain level of support. It's because I can get so much stuff done, and then I can see my wife all day because she's a stay-at-home mom. I'm like, this is great. I can hang out with her. I can get through some emails and get some website stuff done, and people are realizing, this is great.
Yeah, and actually, I know this because I've had the same situation. And I'm much more productive when I'm home because, I like my coworkers. In some cases, I love my coworkers. They're just great. They're longtime friends, but because of that, I'm sitting in my office and people just walk in and start talking while I'm in the middle of doing something. And what am I going to say? Get the hell out of here! I'm not Perry White or anything. And it just slows you down.
It'll be interesting to see in a few years when they start doing research into this, finding what that balance is between having that community and knowing your coworkers and having those relationships versus the work from home. Because there's got to be some balance that's somewhere in there.
Definitely.
And that'll be interesting.
Yeah, that's why I think the hybrid work, I mean, this is only for people who have the ability to work remotely, because there's so many of us who can't. But for people who work remotely, I think the hybrid concept is I don't think it's going to be going away completely. I just don't think so.
I sure hope not. My office is in the IT department. All the damn people that can't get their laptop to work, my God, it slows down that slows down that podcast edit. I can tell you that.
I bet it does.
All right, Jeff Feingold, thanks for joining me again this week.
It was great talking to you, AJ. Have a really great weekend.
You're listening to WKX in the Morning. I'm your host, AJ Kearse. Be sure to get more from the New Hampshire Business Review at nhbr.com.